Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Right Dishonourable podcast. My name is Jimmy Nichols, and as per usual, I'm joined by Jazza John.
Jazza. I swear you use the exact same words to introduce me every single week.
Yep.
And as per usual. Hello, everybody. Lovely, lovely to have you with us this week. We've got a guest, which is very exciting. We've got the wonderful Daniel J. Layton, actor.
Lovely, wonderful. I'll take that. Yeah. Started off well.
Yeah, no, excellent.
Good.
We have Daniel here because Hillary Clinton is now the Democratic nominee.
And as her number one fan, as her quasi-spokesman, I need to be everywhere this week.
Essentially, he walked past me, bumped into one another, and was like, I need to be on the podcast to talk about Hillary. And
it's so
true. Got it on.
Yeah, no, and well done.
Yeah.
For having me on. Congratulations.
I mean, it was very last minute. I literally texted you.
I'm watching the football last night.
Yeah.
France are doing all right. Oh, good. Apparently I'm doing a podcast tomorrow. Fine.
Excellent. So I suspect you're completely read up and very prepared for all of our topics. Speaking of which, Jimmy, what are we going to be doing? First of all, it is...
Hillary Clinton.
It is Hillary Clinton.
Surprisingly. The obvious topic, how big a deal is it that there is a woman nominee for the presidency in the US? This is never.
The enthusiasm is oozing out of you, Jimmy.
Well, Spoiler alert.
Very. So we're going to be discussing Hillary, her road to the presidency. Is it going to be a smooth one? Is it going to be a bumpy one?
And tune in later to find out.
Yeah, and who the fuck is Gary Johnson? And then secondly, we're going to be talking about the debates that have been happening across various mediums in the run-up to the EU referendum. ITV have had two. BBC have got, 20 question times happening between now and the 23rd of June. I don't think that's actually an exaggeration. And I was, in my work, as you guys know, I work at Facebook, and we had the Prime Minister come in and have a little town hall with us. Very good. Somebody called him Dodgy Dave, and that became, the main, takeaway headline from the whole event. But we also had Penny Mordaunt, who... is a person who
she's a Tory MP.
She's got an excellent name, though. It's Mordaunt.
Mordaunt.
She just sounds like a villain.
Yet another person on the Leave camp with a foreign surname who wants us to leave.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Self-loathing. And then Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish First Minister, came in and was very short and Scottish about everything.
She does other things. She's not just very short.
Also talks about exporting whiskey loads.
Is she?
She didn't.
She's obsessed.
Obviously.
She's brand Scotland with the whiskey and the alcoholism and the premature death.
Oh, now you've offended.
Oh, yeah.
You've off the border.
Okay.
Thanks, Jimmy. That was really sweet.
All the two listeners we have north of Hadrian's Wall.
I don't know. If you are Scottish and you want to berate Jimmy for his racist remarks,
all I'm saying is statistically, it's grim in Glasgow.
Oh dear. And then finally, after we discuss the state of the debates, we're going to be going into the fact that the government decided to extend the voter registration deadline because the system crashed 2 hours before it closed on the 7th of June.
So we are basically talking about an IT fuck-up here.
Yeah.
Fundamentally.
I feel like we're at our best when we deal with those kinds of topics, though, right?
You are
a tech journalist.
I used to be a tech journalist, yes, so I can provide valuable insights into the...
That's helpful.
How stuff crashes.
Because too many people went on it, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Right, excellent. We're going to listen to some music now.
Oh, lovely.
And yeah, I know.
I mean, you won't listen to music, but the listeners will.
Yeah.
Fine, that's a shame.
I'll sing for
you.
I'm
leaving.
He thought he was going to get a live performance from the old border. But yeah, we're going to go into our first topic, which is Mrs. Clinton. I pointed at you. That means I'm ready, Jimmy. Just start introducing Hillary Clinton as a topic, for goodness sake.
So Hillary Clinton, despite being a known liar and generally evil person, is apparently very popular with certain people in England. Daniel, why is it you're supporting of Hillary Clinton?
Can I just say, Jimmy, you are such a fucking troll.
I wanted to plunge him in the deep end so he knows how this plunge in the deep end
and wind me is what you've just
said. Less of a goading question. Why do you think that people are not as enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton as a prospective president as you perhaps are?
I think that, well, first of all, they are, because she won the primaries quite convincingly. You know, she won more delegates, more states, more primaries, more open primaries, more closed primaries. She won 3 million votes.
In general terms, she's one of the least popular presidential candidates the Democrats have fielded
in a very long time.
Trump.
Yeah, now, here's the thing on that is Hillary Clinton, historically, during a campaign, has incredibly negative responses from people. People tend to... Her approval ratings are low. When she's in office, they're sky high. She gets the job done. They love her. She's an awful campaigner, but as someone who does work, she's next level.
They have been trying to...
Yeah, of course you
can. She's fucking great. We should mention that she is, that they are trying to indict her for using a personal email server.
Now,
as Secretary of State,
She's a bit of a scoundrel, really, isn't she?
No, here's the thing.
I mean, this is part of a pattern of repeated lying.
But if I may,
you may,
to respond to a pattern of repeated.
Yeah.
It's also one in a long line of a pattern of repeated things that have been completely investigated and found nothing. Like, throughout the Clinton's history...
I mean, they haven't found nothing. A court's already ruled that she flouted federal regulations on email
servers.
But
can I tell you somebody else who did exactly the same thing when they were Secretary of State? Colin Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not... He's been asked to hand over his private email servers, has handed over nothing. Hillary has handed over, 55,000 pages
of email. She has redacted stuff from it, hasn't she? And also, they've had to, like, keep pushing her to hand over stuff. She's repeatedly, like, tarried and said, no, I'm not going to hand over anything.
No.
And they've had to keep pushing her.
She handed things over. Like, she handed things over. That is a fact. And you can twist these things.
In the end, she handed things over.
Okay. Isn't the main... So she is attacked as... She's been attacked as the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party ever since, like, 2012.
Ever since 1992. Arguably since 1976.
And so there is a lot of political baggage when it comes to Hillary. And that is why... And she's had, like, 25 years of being at the forefront of American politics and being a target of those...
So my...
kind of negative views.
Right? My view on it is basically anyone our age, generally speaking, has grown up hearing an incredibly strong attack from the right wing of Hillary. Like, they basically... She's been accused of everything. She's been accused of embezzlement and fraud and murder. She was accused of murdering her best friend.
I mean, did she murder her best friend?
No, she did not. I'm here, I can confirm. It was absolutely a suicide. But then also... People don't tend to look into these things. They read the headline, they see Hillary Clinton accused of embezzlement, they see the word embezzlement and they run with that word. And then they ignore the subsequent articles that say Hillary Clinton investigated, nothing was found, completely fine.
But she is a known liar. I mean, the whole thing about being shot at in Bosnia, that was just proved
spoiler,
to be false.
Spoiler, she's a politician.
Yeah, but even by politician standards, she's...
When was the last time you didn't twist things?
What, me personally? Yeah. Against Hillary?
Not against Hillary, against your life. Like, so someone asked you a question, and you embellished something, a story, that...
There's embellishment, and then there is outright lying. Right. She's an outright liar.
Okay, so children, I'll ask you to take a breath, calm down. Well done for going on the attack very strongly there, Jimmy. I'm very proud of you, little journalist, you. I want to ask, first of all, you, Jimmy, do you think that it's significant that the... Democratic Party has ended up selecting a woman for the first time as its presidential candidate?
Well, she's held it as, like, we finally proved that, you know, a woman can be president. I think ever since Clinton's been in the running in this presidential campaign, we've known that a woman could be president of the US. So there was never any doubt from the beginning that Hillary Clinton stood a substantial chance of winning this presidential election. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah,
she's always been the favourite.
Yeah, I mean, she's certainly been the favourite since the Republican, you know, candidacy race went to shit and Donald Trump got elected. And she's still the favourite now. So, yeah, it does kind of cap off something, but we've known for a while that a woman could be elected.
It's a nice other milestone, right?
Like, yeah,
I think that there's a few things. So there's some people who've been saying, there's been women in office all over the place. It's fine. It doesn't matter anymore, and that's bollocks. Because if you look compared to all of the other men who have been in power all over the world. Like, it's still a relative. We've had Margaret Thatcher, who have we had since? And who else viable have we had since? And I think Hillary in America, sure. I think even before this campaign, so back in 2013, 2014, you're like,
so
she's likely going to be
the next one. How do you think that she would be different to her as a man?
I'll finish this point.
Yeah,
but basically, she has been likely to be at least the nominee, if not the president, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from her, you raise the question of who? Like, Elizabeth Warren.
Or, yeah.
I mean, Carly Fiorina on the other side, but she was never really going to get the nomination. There are so few women, whereas 16 people on the Republican side were male. You had all these men listed, Joe Biden, and you're like, okay, so where are the other? It is still a huge deal that a woman has become the nominee. You just wonder, where's the next one? Same, where's the next black guy? Where's the first Latino guy? Where are they?
Is it more impressive than electing a black man as president, though?
Yeah.
Given America's historic racism.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, but I think it is, in its own way, massive. Like, it doesn't dismiss...
If they hadn't elected Barack Obama, it would be a much bigger deal. The fact that America, which, you know, a huge history of racism, slavery, etc., elected a black president is much more of a big deal than a woman being elected as president.
Sure, but I mean, women didn't have the vote for a long time. Women didn't have... still don't have equal rights in a lot of places. It's not like electing a black president fixed all of this systemic sexism that has been throughout...
I know, but as a symbol, which is really what we're arguing about here.
Sure, but I still think it makes them... Basically, we're three privileged white guys who are sitting here talking about... If you tell a young woman and you point to the woman president, a young girl, and go, that could be you. See, you tell a young girl, you could be anything you want, you could even be president, and then you show them a portrait of every single president in the world, sorry, every single president in the country, not a single one of them looks like them. The second you put one there... there is someone who looks like them, and it does make a difference.
Yeah, but
I know where Jimmy's going to go with this, and we have talked about this kind of symbolism and visibility.
I'm actually going to take a.
Oh, very exciting!
You say we're privileged, but Clinton's hardly from down the mines herself.
Sure, no, that's absolutely a fair criticism.
But still, it's
a woman who has dealt with. So she had to change her surname to make her husband more electable. She wanted to keep her original surname, and people were like, "Oh God, we don't like the fact that you want to be called Rodham when you're married to Clinton," so she changed her name so that he could... She has been through sexism because she's a woman in America. Mm. Now, she's still rich, she's still white, she's still privileged. She didn't come from a place of privilege. She does carry hot sauce in her bag. She does, but she always has.
I know. I want to bring it back to specifically her gender and how that makes her a different political candidate to perhaps somebody with exactly the same policies who might be male.
I've had this conversation before. If I had two candidates, ignoring any names, if there were two candidates for an election, exactly the same policies, exactly the same experience, and the one difference was that one is a woman and one is a man, at this point, I would pick the woman because it does make a statement.
But does it make them a different candidate?
I think arguably it can, but that then depends on the personal history.
So if they have the same policies, though, then...
But there is something to be said, and maybe it's just my perception, on women's temperament and women's... sort of, like, they tend to just...
This is the argument that women are more consensual in their politics, isn't it? That they're a little bit less adversarial.
I guess so, yeah. That is, and I don't know, I just always lean towards...
Speaking of adversaries, what's interesting is that Hillary Clinton has reached the minimum number of delegates and pledged delegates that she needs in order to get the nomination. Her only competitor in the Democratic race, Bernie Sanders...
#FeelTheBurn
get some cream. That's surprising, Mr.
Dillon.
He's not yet dropped out of the race, and something like 48% of the American public as a whole want him to stay in the race and keep contesting. Do you think that he should be doing this? I think that, Daniel, you're going to say no.
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 I think, well, there's two sides. I think that he is perfectly within his sort of right and capability to stay in the race until the convention. Fact is, he can't win.
He can't win the Democratic.
He can't win the Democratic, and I doubt he would be able to win the general.
He does consistently poll higher against Trump than Hillary.
General polls at the moment still aren't really anything. Like,
to be fair, you make that argument every single time we talk US politics, that it is quite early to say how the candidates will face off.
I know, but I'm using your arguments against him.
There's still a lot of... Yeah, thank you, I really appreciate that. Two of you at once. There's still a lot of, like, rancour in the Democratic side at the moment. I think it's good for him to stay in... but change his message. You know, he's always said, I'm going to be into the end. And hell, Hillary was in right the way till the end. There's one more, at the time of recording, there is one more primary, say, place in DC. There is the convention to come. And he can use the movement he has at the moment to sort of keep pushing her and keep making her policies more well-rounded, more progressive. It has happened, and that's a brilliant thing.
So
I don't think he needs to immediately... But I do... At the same time, I do think he needs to... And he has, in a way, after his meeting with Obama, tone back the rhetoric.
The anti-Hillary stuff.
Because at this point, he... And saying the whole thing about sending letters to the superdelegates and trying to convince them that he has momentum on his side. It's like... And yet, you didn't win California, and you didn't win New Jersey, and you didn't win New York, and you didn't win all of these things. He won. The only thing he beat her on is the caucuses, arguably the least democratic of all.
And can you explain to the listeners who might not know what a caucus is, what a caucus is?
Yes, and please bear with me because it's going to sound mental. Right.
That's partially because it is.
Yeah. So a caucus is basically you go to a room and you have to be there by a particular time and you can't leave until they're over. You literally, imagine if you will, a village hall. You have on one side a big sign that says Hillary, on the other side a big sign that says Bernie, and for a brief period a sign that said Martin O'Malley. And if you support... bless him. And if you support... You go to stand in the area designated to your candidate, they count you up, and then... When they realise, oh, you've not got 15%, Martin O'Malley fans, sorry, you're out, go stand in the middle with all the other undecided people. People come and they try and convince you to join their side. And this goes on until you have a winner. And this is batshit crazy. Because people, you have to be there the whole way through. So say you have childcare issues, say you're an elderly person, you can't really leave. Like, you don't have as much of a say. So it's also... Bernie Bros tended to be the most vocal people, so obviously they're going to win. They just beat you down until you submit. That's comedy. I didn't mean it. Please don't tweet me. But yeah, like they're just quite an undemocratic thing. But he did win, and he did win them. Mm. Fair play. But for you to only win the most caucuses and not win more votes and not win more primaries and not win more delegates and not win more superdelegates and still make the point of, yeah, but like I'm better is. Just a bit disingenuous.
When the Bernie Bros argue that Clinton's got corporate America, or at least some portion of corporate America behind her, and he's just, he's just existing on donations, right. Often less than $30 from each person.
$27.
It's $27, sorry.
I found that argument very annoying. As somebody who's fiscally... reasonably right-wing, as was rightly pointed out by quite a lot of our podcast last
he's,
week.
He's really upset about this. The butthole is real.
Corporate America is part of America. Like, you, as a president, you govern for absolutely fucking everybody, and you need a buoyant economy in order to provide stuff like Obamacare and social welfare and streets and roads and public transport. And so I think that you have to go in being able to compromise and to work with those people and not to be consistently hostile in the way that Sanders is.
Right.
So that's me on my soapbox.
I would agree. I do... It does...
I think that it's her strength and not her weakness.
It does make me sit there every now and again and go, oh, could you just tell people what you said? Could you just release the speeches? Just make them shut up. Like, it does... And it may not make them shut up. Like, she may have gone, guys, I love you, you're totally fine. And that would then be like, oh, for fuck's sake, Hillary. But... I agree with you that you can't just... It creates an us and them, and I don't... Not that she needs... Not that, like, her getting all of this corporate support is the tits. But, like, it's not... It's assigning purity, I think, and this is something that has been here,
I think that's a bit of a weak argument. It's not really a purity thing. It's, like, endemic political corruption through, you know, mass spending of corporate money.
So this is something interesting that Sanders has actually ended up pulling her further to the left on. When it comes to stuff like TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership with the EU, she's softened on it, said that she doesn't support it. She's become a lot less... enthusiastic about stuff like fracking. She has said that...
I mean, she was never enthusiastic about fracking.
Was she going around going, let's frack the shit out of people. So she wanted local communities to be able to be NIMBYs, essentially. Right. But she's definitely been like... She's definitely softened and said that it should be up to local communities that are able to decide how they do it. And also, she's said that she would support having a Supreme Court judge who looks into campaign financing and being able to rein that in. Which could be seen as like slightly dodgy because of how much she relies on it. It's kind of biting the hand that feeds.
And yet, at the same time...
But,
that is the system at the moment. And if the system is there and you have to use that to compete, then do. Like, but she's been sitting there the whole time going,
You could make that argument for any type of political campaigning. I mean, if we were talking about, Zach Goldsmith's racist campaigning, that's a tactic, it's a legitimate tactic by your standards. It can be used.
Yeah, so there's financing and there's being a racist.
Well, the financing thing is still dodgy from a moral point of view.
Right.
So,
not in the same way as racism.
So Hillary is
depends on your point of view. Really.
She's 100% going to be the Democratic nominee.
Yes, that is the thing.
Like how dramatic it is at the actual convention, what the Bernie Bros actually end up doing is we'll see. It'll be interesting.
What I really like about what I'm hearing at the moment is that there's this new. Some people who were involved in the Bernie movement have channeled all of that into a completely new movement where they're trying to elect a more progressive Congress. Hmm. So they're going to use essentially a presidential style campaign, like a 400 headed campaign, to elect essentially a brand new Congress, which I think is amazing. It's so much better than this one guy who's made an enemy of loads of like corporate America,
who's only a Democrat like
for 5 minutes. Yeah. Like I feel like that is so good because, the revolution that he wants to take hold...
Do you prefer Sanders' policies or Clinton's policies? If we're talking
about
policies. This is another issue.
To finish what I was going to say is that this revolution should take hold from the bottom all the way up, because if we put this one person in office, but he's still fighting against the Republican Congress and Senate and House and all this stuff, he's barely going to get anything done. But if we can get a more progressive, then that is how... I guess I'm pragmatic and incremental.
Obama, like,
absolutely,
having two houses against him,
and it'll be a huge barrier to Clinton, and it would have been a huge barrier to Sanders, because there's something about when you get elected as a Democrat, the Republicans never accept that. As to whether I actually did, there's a great site I signed with where you can answer all of the questions. Basically, they ask you policy questions, and you put where your position is, and it totals everything up, and it comes out. And I came up, unsurprisingly, 98% with Hillary Clinton. I came up 97% with Bernie.
Because they have
because
a
they
huge
are quite close
of overlap.
A huge amount of overlap. And this is and it's been lost sight of, and especially been lost sight of when you come with bullet points of certain things. So for instance, the 15 million, it would be a lovely minimum wage. The $15 minimum wage. He says everyone should have it. She says, I believe that everyone should have it, but I'm not sure of it economically, so we'll start with 12, 15 in places where it's absolutely worked, and we'll try and build the economy so that we can get to a point where everyone has 15.
I mean, the...
That is different.
The sites with the like the one you just suggested are very much like tick box in their approach.
Sure, but
it's a problem when you're answering the questions.
It's not a yes or a no. It's a yes, but, and there's several different options.
There's some things like, do you support a minimum wage? I guess it's a fairly binary kind of question, but there are lots of other questions which are not really suitable for a binary or even a scaling
but the thing
answer.
Is, this one, yeah, you're right,
and
but this
I,
one
I
is
mean,
different. Because
in,
you can
in,
say,
in summary, my point would be that there are substantial differences in temperament between Bernie and Clinton.
Sure.
And you've just kind of spoken to them. Clinton's more of a pragmatist, Bernie's more of a hardliner.
Somebody once described the difference between Bernie and Hillary to me as Bernie is running basically to have a revolution and to completely flip the whole system on its head. Hillary is running to be the best possible commander-in-chief for the system that already exists. And those are two legitimate kind of stances that you could summarise those two political candidates with, I think.
I think it comes down to whether or not you believe that a complete revolution could or could not happen. Like, I think that it's with the current political system, I don't think electing Bernie Sanders as president is going to fix everything or change everything completely. I think it would make a statement, but I don't think it would do it. So that's why I'm so keen on this idea of the 400-headed Congress. Like, fix it from the bottom up rather than putting one guy on the top.
Speaking of the power that Sanders is going to have going into the convention, there's been a load of whispers about vice presidential picks. Partially because it's kind of like top Trumps, and everybody loves that game. Do you reckon it's going to be Elizabeth Warren?
I have been after Clinton Warren for about 2 years. And you can go back and Google my tweets. I have been saying this for a long time. I, in many ways, thank my lucky stars Elizabeth Warren never ran. Because if she did, I'd be like, fuck. Yeah. She's also a woman and she's a little bit more progressive than Hillary. Oh, yeah. No. But I just like Hillary. But I like that idea as a ticket. But I also worry that America couldn't elect two women. I wonder if they'd be a bit too scared of that. I worry that you pick someone in... Also, I worry that, like, it's someone who is, again, another old person. Now, there have been two old white men tickets for a long time, mm-hmm. but should she pick a younger Democrat to sort of try and usher in a new generation of Democratic leaders?
Who would you have in mind?
So, I'm interested... Oh, I always forget if it's Kirsten or Kristen Gillibrand. I think she's interesting and young. And vice presidency for me is ceremonial. Although I suppose you could...
Biden's been great. Kirsten Gillibrand. Yeah, you're correct. Biden has been a really fantastic vice president in that he's taken... He's kind of been, like, the first lady in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
In that he's taken on stuff like the war on cancer, has been a really beautiful advocate for, like, Obamacare, and has really succeeded in places where Obama hasn't been fantastic at communicating.
This is the thing. Fantastic at communicating. Mm-hmm. Hillary, isn't God love her, is an amazing worker... But when it comes to communicating on a big scale, she's shit.
But isn't that a necessary quality for a president's
health? Is it?
It's a substantial amount of their job.
Or do you want them to get it done? Like
you said it yourself, they're a symbolic figure. I mean, this is a massive problem for a president to have.
I just feel like there's an amazing piece in the New York Times. Sorry, New York Magazine. Wait, what?
The New Yorker?
Nope. New York Magazine.
Right.
That one. It was essentially like a character piece on Hillary. And at the moment we're looking at a general election between a demagogue, magnetic, ridiculous, like, brash, huge figure.
Are you talking about Donald Trump?
I am talking about Donald Trump.
I thought it was about Clinton.
he draws all of this attention and he draws all of this kind of, like, verve. And then you've got someone who is diligent, who works incredibly hard, who is one... And by all accounts, from people who have worked with her and who have...
You're being very, very nice about her.
No, like, I'm being truthful.
She has a history of scumbaggery as well.
For fuck's sake. Based on accounts from other people who have worked with her... She is, by all accounts...
I mean, based on accounts of other people who've worked with her, she's also a bit
diligent,
of a scumbag.
Diligent, hard-working, intelligent person, but she's not that great on the magnetic front.
Bringing it back to VP picks, I think that Elizabeth Warren is particularly...
she would tick the Bernie boxes.
She'd tick the Bernie boxes because what the left wing of the Democratic Party has at the moment is a huge amount of enthusiasm and a huge amount of momentum. Yeah. Activists there, Elizabeth Warren would continue to drive that.
She came out and vocally and happily and enthusiastically supported Clinton, only to be met with Bernie Bros being like, you're a fucking sellout, and yeah, you shut the fuck up. And it's like, oh, okay. But then again, I didn't like Obama after 2008 for a bit. I was like, Yeah. Like this guy. Come the general, I'm sitting there going, what a man. What
but
a
then
fucking man.
Warren could also be come hugely around. He could be hugely she could be hugely influential because of the direct attacks that have been going between her and Donald Trump. I think Warren is an incredibly effective attack dog against the Donald.
Did you
what
see
do you think about that?
So it's really interesting that throughout the primary so far, he has been the social media guy. He has been the one. Mm-hmm. And now that we're looking... We're starting the pivot. We're starting to turn. There's been two major things. So basically... And this is... You can check Maddow. This is... he tweeted that, like, oh, so Obama's supporting Hillary because he wants another 4 years of Obama. No one else does. And she replied, we've deleted your account.
Which
I lost my shit. I thought that was the fucking funniest thing I'd seen in a really long time. His original tweet got 35,000 or so retweets. Hers got 435 something.
This is somewhat comparing dick sizes. Isn't
sure it is.
It?
But then he also said, but I have a further point, if I can finish it, is that, goodness, she
he then tweeted about Elizabeth Warren being all like, Pocahontas is at it again, she's got a big mouth, she's nasty, she's awful.
Elizabeth Warren, who is of, who has Native American descent,
he keeps calling her Pocahontas, yeah. Which is a whole other argument. Oh. Anyway, she replied with, no, seriously, delete your account. And again, he got like 7,000, she got like 37,000. And it's interesting that he has been the one whose Twitter account has been such a big, interesting thing to look at, and now all of a sudden, they're dwarfing him. And it's like, does that show evidence of a turn, of a movement?
No, 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 it doesn't.
Okay.
But if you
look at demographics in young people and she's had trouble getting into young people, if she continues it, it's sure, not something
sure,
to
sure.
laugh at.
But I'm really aware of how much social media traction somebody like Jeremy Corbyn has, and Jeremy Corbyn continues to be really bad at his job. I want to...
See previous episodes.
So something like, there was a poll last week, and I love a good poll, that showed that 50% of Americans, or something, just under 50% of Americans, would like that for there to be a third-party candidate. Mm. There is a third-party candidate.
And he is interesting.
Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party is going to be the only person who is able to contest the presidential election in all 50 states, because they've already applied for it all. Libertarians describe themselves as fiscally conservative, socially liberal, which is very popular.
It depends on the libertarian.
Yeah,
the US.
Does. Well, I mean, Rand Paul was libertarian for a while. Like, yeah. Ron Paul as well, and yeah.
He's slightly odd. I would urge all of our listeners to go and see an interview that he did with Samantha Bee, which is the strangest thing I have ever seen, especially from a presidential candidate. But he's currently polling in a couple of recent polls at around 10%. When we get to actual debate season, he needs to be polling above 15%, and then he gets on the debate stage with Trump and Clinton. There is a side note that I don't think that Clinton is going to agree to debate Trump. I'm just going to put that out there. Because he will rinse her. She's not the best debater.
She's not an awful debater.
No,
isn't she kind of politically obliged to debate him, given that he is the other president?
They have to come to an agreement.
There's nothing in the Constitution that says they have to debate.
That's not what I'm suggesting, but it would be seen as such a...
I agree. And yet when Cameron was sort of trying to avoid being in debates here, I sat there going, fucking weak. I would be annoyed if she didn't.
So if Gary Johnson does end up with 15% in the polls, and does end up on that debate stage, who do you think it hurts more?
Now, this is interesting. I think because I voted Lib Dem in 2010.
Yay!
Yeah, that went well.
I high-fived myself there.
Good. Because I believe that
this
we
is
had...
a Lib Dem podcast.
Great, there you go.
Me and Jimmy are both Lib Dem.
I'm actually no longer Lib Dem.
Oh no, Jimmy didn't renew his card.
Membership and elapse.
Was that conscious or was that an accident?
Consciously accidental, probably.
Right, okay.
It's. I feel
it's
like
very Lib Dem of it. Actually,
just as a general point, it's quite hard to like repeatedly comment on things and actually still be a party member, because we do end up slagging off the Lib Dems quite.
I mean, I just continue to do it happily anyway.
Yeah, Jezza has no fucks to give on that issue.
I voted for them because I believed that we'd had enough and we needed something different. We needed some change, and then all of a sudden, we didn't really have the change. We just had. All the stuff that I voted for them for,
sure,
they
sure.
completely... And I felt like my hands have been burnt on whatever the phrase is, I don't know. And so when I look at third parties and people suggesting they're going to write in for Bernie or vote Green, my balls do go inside my chest a little bit, because I'm like,
that's an image.
Yeah. I'm like, that is... It's a very anatomically interesting. It's a long way for them to go. You're getting really quite how stressed I am about this idea. I think it could damage either. The first time I heard about it, I was like, oh, sick. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to eat into Trump in the same way that Bernie's eating into Hillary. And then I heard him talk. And do you hear him talk about how much he like wants to legalise weed?
Yeah, yeah. And he's really... He used to be the CEO of a marijuana company.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, shit. Socially, you get a lot of people on side, and it worries me. I think it could eat into both. I'm always... Not that I think a two-party system is the only way that should go. It's more an argument of, like, the the actual type of election.
The problem that we have in the US is that they don't have a system that is built for more than two parties.
Right.
The French presidential system, for example, has a multiple party election. The front two then go on into a head-to-head. The US has none of that.
Yeah.
It's first past the post. Whoever gets the most votes, even if it's like 30-something percent, will end up being president. And I think that if we get a third party candidate eating into votes, I think that that makes it easier for Trump to be the next president.
I think you're right. But at the moment, I think they're an unknown quantity. I think that a lot of people will go, Gary Johnson who? Like, but the more he gets attention...
His tagline is Google Gary Johnson.
Great.
And
that's
just
brilliant.
You're going to get redirected to loads of penis pictures, aren't you?
But the second you go to... Gary
Johnson's
a porn star, then. Yeah. Well, no, like, your Harry Johnson. Your Harry Johnson
I thought it was John Thomas is the... The recognised phrase.
But I think Harry Johnson is...
I'm not well-versed, penis. I must say.
On euphemism.
Penis images on Google.
Anyway,
but I just feel like the more attention he gets, then we'll sort of see more. And then at the moment, it's a bit too soon for us to be going, who is he going to take it from? I think...
I don't really see the overlap between Gary Johnson and Trump voters. I can't see people saying, I want to vote Trump.
Disaffected Republicans.
Yeah. And there are a lot of them. Oh, yeah. But, and who for whom Hillary Clinton is as much of a pariah as she is for you. Like, they're going, I'm never voting Trump. But I can't bring myself to vote for that woman.
I'd still vote for Clinton, but, you know, she's the best of a very bad bunch.
Yeah, but we're British and we don't get a vote, unfortunately. Guys, if you would like to wade in on the Hillary Clinton debate, we've talked about this for a really long time, then please do reach out to us on Twitter at @RightDishonor. Or you can leave a comment on our website.
There's more to her than you think there is, and a lot of it is fibs.
Okay, yeah.
From her.
We are.
At least we figured out that much.
Good. I'm just going to end this section. We're now going to talk about the EU referendum.
This will be a lot shorter.
Wait till I get going, mate.
Okay.
In case you haven't noticed, dear listener, we're going to have a referendum on our membership of the European Union in the next couple of weeks, on the 23rd of June. Isn't that exciting?
Lovely.
Daniel J. Layton.
Yeah.
Do tell me, where do you stand on this debate?
I would like to stay in.
Excellent, good. Well, you're in good company. Although Jimmy sometimes pretends to be Eurosceptic, but isn't really. But it makes for really good content on the, on the podcast.
I'm not going to be voting.
What? Why would you tell me
that? Because I'm going to be in America, so I'm having a proxy.
Oh, so that's fine.
I really wanted that
such a drop.
Yeah.
I would have literally kicked you out. Of the
I know.
Right
no,
now.
I like. I,
Thanks
I,
for the Hillary contribution.
Now fuck off. Like, I registered, and then I was like, ah la la, shit. And then I'm going to be away. Oh no. And then I realised that the postal vote wouldn't arrive to me on time. So I was like,
so you're doing it through proxy.
Yeah. Excellent. I just had to trust someone enough to.
So the nation has really gallivanted, dove headfirst right into debate season of obviously whether or not we should stay in the EU. In the last week, we've seen two debates on ITV, a Question Time special, and a BuzzFeed town hall at my local work.
Can I just say, we fucking suck at debates.
I know!
Really also, like, why do we do them? Like, I know we copied America, but they do it well. We're bad at award shows. Like, we can't do the Brits as good as they can do the Grammys. And we can't do debates as well as they do presidential
debates.
That's
an interesting analogy.
I think we just believe our own bullshit slightly less than the Yanks do.
That's probably fair.
I think right now, because of the fact that Cameron hates debating people and would rather do basically a sliding doors thing where one comes in, one comes out, puts their case, I've become very aware of the fact that this allows for people to basically stand up in front of an audience, say a load of things that aren't true, and then leave, and nobody's been held accountable.
The audiences are usually quite belligerent at these things.
Yeah.
There's usually somebody who, like, it's usually a young woman for some reason who actually, like, stands up and says, you're shit, you suck, go fuck
Which
yourself.
Actually happened at the BuzzFeed Town Hall.
We will move
on to that. I want to first of all mention the multi-debate, which had three people from Leave, three people from Remain on ITV. It was significant because five out of the six people on stage were lady people. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. The Telegraph had an article that said, is this the new phase of politics? No, it's
the Telegraph are awful, eh?
you mean the Tory graph? but it was Boris Johnson from the Leave camp, the Tory minister Andrea Leadsom, and Labour's Gisela Stewart, who's interesting because she's one of only about seven ish MPs from Labour who are backing the Out campaign.
Well, and Kate Hui was originally quite a big deal in one of the Leaving campaigns, but she left for some reason.
Probably because she realised it was a terrible idea.
Maybe.
In case you don't know, listeners, I'm very pro-EU.
Are you?
Yeah, I know. I'm usually so coy about my opinions on the matter. In the Remain camp, there was Angela Eagle, the Labour front bencher, wee Scottish lass. That was racist. Nicola Sturgeon. I have a Scottish surname, so I'm going to play that card right now. And Amber Rudd from the Conservatives. Now, we saw in opening statements in this particular debate that, because it was very clear that it was very high estrogen, shall we say, because almost every single woman there who was married and had children said, as a woman and a mother, I'm voting for insert leave or remain here for the future of my children. And I'm like, why is it only female politicians who talk about their politics as a mother?
That you're opening a massive wormhole and a huge questions of identity and gender norms and the idea that the men don't, that the women have family at the fore of their mind. That's a bigger question.
It was very obvious that this particular debate, because it was very women-heavy, was meant for the female demographic, because women are seen as not being as engaged in politics. Mm. Women are treated as a block vote, which seems really odd to me.
In what way are they treated as a block vote?
They're targeted,
you do talk
targeted
about the
as, like,
vote.
The women vote, despite the fact they're the majority of the country, which is quite odd. But what did you... So there ended up being quite a lot of personal attacks on Boris Johnson, specifically. The old...
He's a bit of a scumbag, to be fair.
I'm glad you called someone else a scumbag.
This is a regular thing, me calling politicians.
Yeah,
it was
actually
Amber Rudd who said, with all of the false figures being thrown around on either side of the referendum debate, Amber Rudd, quite wittily, I was very proud of her, she said, the only number that Boris Johnson is interested in is number 10. And it was do you think that Boris, in this sense, has become more of a hindrance than a help in the Leave campaign?
Right. The entire campaign, the entire EU referendum stuff has been a clusterfuck from day one. I'm sorry. But, I remember when they sort of started announcing who's in charge of the Leave and who's in charge of Remain. I'm like, oh, great, on one side we've got Gove. Oh, I hate him, he's awful. On the other side, we've got Theresa May. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Theresa May's kind
she's
of been...
She's been very quiet.
Yeah,
she has,
but on that first day, I was like, oh, my God.
She wants to be prime.
And then Boris comes along, and he's like, whiff-waff. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. What they've done is get...
I probably quite like you calling him Jesus, actually.
There's no Russell Brand,
I just feel like... I liked Boris when he hosted Have I Got News For You.
That one time,
couple of times,
10 years
was very good. But then he went, and I thought it was funny when he went to the Olympics and he had his coat open and waved the flag a bit rubbish. I enjoyed all of that. But then he started saying things that may or may not affect our future, and I started getting worried and started getting upset.
What are the things in particular are you worried about?
Oh, just the whole... I've seen big pictures of him with the $350 million that we're going to give to the NHS, apparently. It's like, oh, great, are we? I don't believe you, but fine.
Is an incorrect figure, we should say.
Isn't that the gross figure?
That's the gross figure, yeah. But we never actually send that amount. We don't get it back.
Surely we'd have to use that money somewhere else to fix the things that the EU do already. And that's me asking the question.
Sorry, what was the...
So if the 350 million... Say that we did get 350 million, mm-hmm. and we just have that money, do we then not... Would we then need to use that to compensate for the things that... trade deals and stuff like that? So it's bollocks to say, cool, I just wanted to make sure that
wrong. So we've seen a lot of the mainstream media, and I don't think we're
it's
quite
just
part
all
of that yet. We've seen the mainstream media say that there's a lot of blue-on-blue action, which sounds like...
I'd be down with that, yeah.
Jeez.
That's a joke for the dads.
That was excellent.
Smurf porn.
Do the dads like Smurf porn?
Do you think...
No, watching these
apparently.
Children, calm down, please. With blue and blue action, conservative against conservative, because the Tory party is pretty much split down the middle on whether or not to stay in the EU, at least it's
well,
MPs
the,
are.
The MPs are. The membership of the Tory party is largely vote leave.
Yeah.
Do you think
that these personal attacks on members of the campaign, like Boris Johnson, people saying that you're just doing this so that you can get into number 10. Do you think that those are warranted, or do they sully the
That is why he's doing it.
There's got, I think there's a fair...
But is it a distraction also, like, to informing the electorate so that they can make a decent decision?
It's a distraction, but it's a better story. The EU referendum fundamentally is quite boring. There's like a lot of boring details about weird policies that no one really gives a shit about.
The amount of times I hear you say, oh yeah, but it's a good story.
It is a good story.
This is why people pay journalists.
No, but it's true. Like, and this bleeds over into, not to bring us back to the American level, but like, it's everywhere. Is that a lot of the time the media are seeking out the best story, and like,
I mean,
the
best story is our job, speaking
yeah,
as
and
a journalist.
Yeah, and it is fine, but sometimes it just clouds. So I then look at this and I'm like, is it any wonder people don't know Hillary's policies?
I didn't know she had.
She does.
Policies.
Just Google them. And then is it any wonder that I don't really know as much about the EU referendum as I should? Because all I'm getting is.
It's partly something the public are conspiring in the sense that they read more like populist sensationalist stories, they get more clicks, you know.
Speaking of populism and sensationalism, Farage has been wheeled out time.
When you got Boris, Farage and Michael Gove on one side, that really should help you make your mind up.
I quite like Gove. I disagree with him on a lot, but
what he tried to do to the education system was fucking disgraceful.
Yeah, but there was principle behind it. Farage has been rolled out, and I think that this is actually a conspiracy on the Remain campaign, that they've invited him to all of these debates so that the Leave campaign seems really
toxic. I have a theory that Donald Trump is actually working for Hillary.
Is actually a lot. there was, before the debate with, not with David Cameron, but with, like, the sliding doors kind of debates that Cameron does these
What's
days.
That?
Basically, Cameron comes in, answers some questions from the audience, leaves. Farage comes in, answers some questions
rather
from
than
the audience,
stand next
and they're calling that a debate. And that's essentially what's
it's
happening across
hall.
The board. Yeah, it's a town hall. Basically, a couple of days before the debate that he had, or the town hall that he had with David Cameron, on ITV, he said that voting to remain in the EU was a vote to allow British women to be victims of sexual assault attacks similar to those that we saw in Cologne over the New Year. He was brought up... This was posed to him by a young questioner in the audience in ITV. And, like, it is... The Leave campaign have been trying to avoid talking about immigration, and Farage has really pulled the focus back to it, saying that we're going to win on immigration as an issue.
This is interesting. There was a great graphic that I saw doing the rounds. I don't know where it came from. Sorry, I can't share. But it was basically all of the things that the Leave campaign say about immigration, and then the facts. So, like, why can't they go somewhere else? They do, and they show you where that we actually get a very small percentage of people migrating.
Comparative to other nations.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, it seems to me...
Sorry, I didn't follow your point there.
Well, obviously this is the...
Immigration as an issue tends to be... I think
my point was that it seems to be that a lot of the Leave campaign has been based on hearsay and... This will probably happen, so let's stop. And actually, if you look at they say a lot of things.
Isn't that a good description of the Remain campaign?
Yeah, I think that both camps.
This is my problem. This is why I said a whole thing has been a clusterfuck. There's just a lot of like fear and don't listen to them because like there's been a couple of good books that have been very cut and dry. That just sort of say here are the facts and here are the arguments from both sides and presenting both sides quite positively. And it allows you to sit there and read and get the information and go, as opposed to just putting out these figures and these faces and these voices.
So speaking of those figures and Farage kind of bringing it back to immigration being the main issue, he was widely berated by the rest of the Leave campaign for saying those really racially charged and anti-immigrant
things. It is true that the Remainers, and just actually the left in general, have been quite weak on things like the Cologne attacks. I mean, I don't think there was a cover-up. We actually did cover it on an episode of the podcast, but there was a definite reticence to talk about the different social and cultural mores that are actually being imported with migration.
So what's really interesting is that I think since Farage has entered onto the scene and immigration has become a focus point yet again, we've had the rest of the Leave camp say... Oh, these are horrible things that Farage is saying, but did you know that Turkey could possibly join the EU? Can you imagine Turkish people coming to the UK without visas? Oh, goodness gracious. And they have kind of pivoted to a more of a dog whistle kind of racially charged campaigning, I think. So that's quite interesting, for like the fact that Farage has been more at the forefront of the campaign. Something interesting that he did in the ITV debate as well, and something that he does incredibly well in terms of like riling up people's emotions about national identity, is that he holds up his passport and he says, "This passport should say the United Kingdom on it, and it says the EU." And that's not what. Yeah, yeah, it says the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, European Union.
Right.
But that's the same for all EU states. Mm.
But it still says the United Kingdom of Great Britain.
Yeah, right, on the top, and then EU at the bottom.
I mean, his point is that he's a European citizen by law.
Yeah.
Basically.
His point also is something...
I don't understand that point.
It's something very... I understand what he is doing by doing that.
Yeah, I think he's trying to get people riled up, but it seems like on my inside it says British citizen. Like,
yeah, yeah, it is a ridiculous argument, but it's what a lot of people...
I think it is. I mean, we're all around this table, we are European citizens. Mm. That's a legal construct, right? And he's just saying, do you want to be European citizens? Or do you want to be British citizens?
Well, I am.
You can be both, though. No, but... And we are both.
Obviously you can
and
be
what
both,
he's but, saying is that you can't be both, where we are and you can't.
Oh, but the obvious argument is that one of the effects of European integration is that it has eroded national identity. That's part of the idea, is to actually bring...
This is interesting, because it actually... It's interesting that it goes into... So, around St. George's Day, I had a friend quite passionately... complaining about the fact that we don't celebrate being English, we celebrate being British. Scotland has their day, Mike? And what?
No, it was Jacob.
Oh, Jacob. they have St. Patrick's Day.
You are friends of the podcast.
Exactly, but like he's just basically saying that, and so I feel like England as an identity is the same as British. But I feel like my British identity is separate to me being European. I see we have things in common, but the French are very different to us, and the Germans are very different to the French, and...
Well, the argument Freud is making is, do you want to be a European citizen? For some people, the answer to that question would be no.
But what would we be instead?
British, well, just British.
British citizens who happen to also be in Europe but aren't in Europe, what...
No, he. This is the connection he's making between identity and political structures.
Sure, I just feel like it doesn't make sense for me to. That doesn't make sense.
I don't think you're empathising with the mindset of a UKIP supporter.
That's quite fair. No, that's a fair criticism. I should maybe try that one time.
So we're probably more engaged in the political process than your average run of the mill person.
Understatement.
And I've seen some of these debates. I haven't seen all of them. Although 5 million people did watch the six-way debate on ITV on Thursday. Jimmy, you haven't watched any of them, right?
I've watched the Question Time thing.
Do you think that there's just quite a lot of voter fatigue at the moment?
A lot of people don't find politics that interesting anyway.
I haven't watched any of them either.
So... It's relatively good engagement. I mean, you were saying the 5 million figure is similar to the general election debates as well, which is quite good. You shouldn't expect everyone to be massively engaged with political debate, because a lot of people just aren't that interested.
Yeah, like,
do you think that says something about turnout? Do you think that says something about turnout, though? Because people are saying that we need to have a high turnout in order to get a Remain vote.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the arguments, but... I think turnout will probably be between 60% and 70%, so you know, similar to the general election.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why it would be higher, because we haven't had like the Scottish thing where everyone was super engaged before the independence.
I was going to say it does draw huge comparisons and contrasts with the Scottish campaign. Like, I definitely certainly felt like that everyone had an opinion and everyone was passionate about their opinion.
I was up in
there
Scotland
a lot of people
before
now.
The referendum, and like I was in clubs shaking my booty and people I while
people
having
slapping
a debate,
stickers saying
yeah,
yes
yeah.
and no
and having debates in the middle of a club at like 3 o'clock in the morning. It was fucking fantastic for a junkie like me. Mm. That certainly what I see a lot here down in London with a lot of my colleagues and friends is that they just want it to be explained to them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm very biased one way or the other. But people don't understand the facts. And I think that there's this cliche of saying that there's a lot of heat and not a lot of light in terms of the debate around Europe. And I think that we're going to see...
Heat is the only source of light.
okay.
Your cliche is shit. You should use it.
Somebody else used it, and I'm just copying Jimmy. Why do you hate me?
I definitely do feel like I wish things would explain to me better. And not
I don't think you can explain the EU in a neutral way. Like, I could break down the structure of the EU.
I think you can. I think that...
To a certain point, though, it comes down to an opinion of, like, a huge amount of complicated factors, like trade deals and governance models.
Can you not just give facts, though?
Not really. Like, I mean, I think, inevitably, the way you explain... And I'm not even sure there are that many agreed facts. Like, if you wade into debates online... I'm going to use, like, Reddit, the UK subreddit, as an example, but people just can't agree on, say, how democratic the EU is, which you'd have thought was a fairly straightforward question, but it's probably because there's no agreed metric for what democraticness looks like.
We saw this a lot on the BuzzFeed town hall that they had in my offices, and literally, the only reason I want to talk about this is because I was there. we had, in the BuzzFeed town hall, Penny Mordaunt, who is a defence minister in the government who wants to leave the EU... and looks a little bit like a lizard person in a waxwork. She seemed rather evil and continued to spout things that weren't.
Well,
no, Nicola was next and she was great. I loved her. Nicola Sturgeon. And then Farage came and I had to take a break because...
Farage was there.
Because I've had the privilege of being in his company more than once before and I haven't hugely enjoyed it. And then the Prime Minister made a rare appearance on, taking questions
from... With a power stance like no other.
Yeah, so he did the Tory power stance.
What the fuck is that all about?
I don't know, didn't even look comfortable.
So what they do, so it's an acting thing. This is why I'm surprised, because you should know this, Sir Leighton. Basically, you need to place your feet across, and it's like you're something is wrong, and I'm here to solve a problem.
Yeah, that's you the look body ridiculous. People watching, you know, you look ridiculous.
But it's like, an internal,
it's an acting thing in fucking Blackadder.
Yeah.
Leave you. Like, that's essentially... No, it's bollocks. That he stood weird and he looked weird and no one could take it.
And also, journalists recognise it now and you recognised it and you took a video and, like, you know, put it up on Facebook.
And
they're like, this is weird.
Yeah, so this is just on now.
Stand like a human. He has trouble being human.
So, when I was actually there, I saw a huge problem with these kinds of town hall debates and the fact that we don't have more head-to-head debates. Mm. Because people like Penny Mordaunt are able to come out and just say stuff that isn't true. Yeah. She continued to peddle things like, we don't have a veto on others joining the EU. Yeah, we do.
Wasn't that, like, still be a problem in a debate setting?
No. No, because you have people... You have your... opponent who can directly rebuttal any kind of falsehood.
Yeah, but then, by and large, you just have two people shouting different.
But this is why that's the problem with people engaging.
This is why you try and moderate it right, so that you say you've got your 2 minutes to reply to that, and you should. And like, I feel like as well, moderators should have the chance to be able to go, that's wrong. Like if they give you a complete, blatant, incorrect fact, they should have the opportunity. But then again, an American one, Candy Crawley, did the same thing and got ripped to shreds because she basically corrected one of the...
In the 2012...
With Romney, she corrected Romney.
Yeah.
And it's just like... this is why I feel like the debates are flawed, because if the idea of the debates is to give voters the chance to hear the points and they hear... incorrect points, and then incorrect points that are immediately rebutted, and it just is a mess, and you leave them arguably more confused than when you went in. But when I watched the leadership debates, I actually wanted to vote for Nicola. Can we not just have you? Like, I know you want to leave us.
The British National Party have a slightly different platform to the Scottish National Party.
It is interesting. Yeah. But I was like, it's just... I always feel like head-to-head is much better, because at least you do get the opportunity to see everyone on the same...
Especially with a referendum where there are only two options on the ballot.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that there aren't more head-to-heads that are putting one case or the other.
And I understand why David Cameron doesn't want to... Well, then again, David Cameron standing next to Farage while also being opposite him...
You know what? He was at the town hall with BuzzFeed. He was the best.
What, Cameron?
Yeah, but head and shoulders. I did want to also bring up very quickly before we finish this. Those of you who follow Jimmy and I on Twitter would have seen that I noticed that a lot of the audience members who were talking over each other and not waiting their turn to ask questions were old white men. I said that this was privilege in action. Jimmy then said, I'm holding you accountable here.
Are you holding me accountable?
Yeah, yeah. What did you say?
You want me to repeat something I said as a joke, as though I meant it.
All I said,
because I knew it would wind Jezza up, is old white men have the best opinions, which, you know, is just...
which obviously, it was very funny. I lolled. But I did have quite a lot of feedback of people saying, like, maybe it's because they feel really repressed because of loads of young liberal loonies like you. And I was like, yay, trolls are here.
I certainly felt oppressed by you multiple times in this podcast.
But it was the first time, so you should. It was the first time that I've really seen that in action in a political debate. I also noticed there were no... There was one older woman who was an Indian lady who was part of that debate, and she was only part of the conversation when she was asked to ask her question, and that was it. And it was four or five white guys in their 50s, probably. I don't want to stereotype, but they looked like they drove taxis.
Bashing the working class, Jazza. You are a liberal loony.
I know.
It's all true.
And it was them who kept on, especially with Cameron, feeling like they had the right to speak over everybody else. And I thought that was shit. What did you think about it?
I wasn't at the debate.
No, you weren't.
And also, I judge people by what they say and not, you know, the demographic they happen to belong to.
They were also chatting shit as well and being quite rude. And I was simply pointing out a consistency in their profile.
Dear me.
I know, right? Next. Do you guys have any opinions about the barrage of debates that we are seeing on the
We need to get better at them.
Did any of you see the Question Time thing? Because there was one thing.
Oh, right, yeah.
One thing I want to bring up is Eddie Izzard's liability for the Remain campaign.
I think so.
I like him.
I love him to bits, but...
He came out with, like, this... Well, I don't mean this as a slanderous thing, but a Euro-federalist kind of model of, like, we need more integration, we need to, like, fully engage with Brussels.
He's a proper Europhile. He's 3 years ago.
He even said the phrase, we are all Brussels, and I think there's a horrendous tone deafness. If you want to convince people who are on the Leave side as a Remain campaigner, that is not the way to go.
Which is why I thought that Cameron at the BuzzFeed debate was particularly good, because he was really effective in putting across the, look, it's not perfect, and I'm a Eurosceptic, but I still think that we should be part of the European Union, having a separate kind of role from everybody else as they become more integrated.
I don't really understand Cameron's, like, stance on the issue. I know that he's tethered his premiership to it now, and he's committed for career reasons, if nothing else, but he's like, in that biography with the pig-fucking thing...
Oh,
there,
which we can take seriously.
Well, in general, I understand it was quite an accurate
biography. I'm not sure there was any fucking. Wasn't his penis just in it? Does that constitute fucking?
You penetrated it. I would class that as fucking.
Okay. Anyway, with the alleged pig-fucking incident, in the past, he's been known as kind of a Eurosceptic. I'm not really sure what his angle is on this whole thing. Like, why...
Please don't kick me out of my job. Quite like the holidays. Is that all?
Is there no other reason? I know Cameron is sort of famous for having no ostensible principles.
Because at the end of the day, it is more sensible for us to stay in the EU because of various reasons.
I mean,
the reason that he's done this referendum is so that he can appease a part of the Tory party that absolutely despises it, and it's backfiring in his face. And I'm so scared that in like 10 days' time, we're going to end up out of the EU.
I mean, it'll be 2 years after we vote Leave.
Can we change their minds? If we vote Leave, then can we change that?
Well, the referendum is strictly advisory, so actually Cameron has legal powers just to ignore it.
Can he just do that?
You'll have to write to him and ask him.
So I still...
Look, the world is just getting a lot smaller, and so isolationism is mental.
I don't think this is a vote on, like, isolationism versus, integration.
But it makes a statement. It's the same as, like, oh, we'll build a wall. Or, like, basically, there's an awful lot of, like, we're going to move ourselves away
from
you.
Not all politics is just symbols, which appears your way of looking at things.
Okay, I'm going to stop. No. Okay, boys, that is enough. Dear listener, thank you for bearing with us while we butt heads on this. If you have any opinions about the tone of either of the debates, please reach out to us on Twitter. At Right Dishonour. Also, leave us 5 stars on iTunes. It means people find us. Thank you very much. Love you very much. Now, we're going to talk very briefly, probably, because we've talked ever so much.
I'm so sorry.
Daniel was very keen. we're going to talk about the fact that the government decided to extend the voter registration deadline by 2 days because IT problems. Jimmy, you're going to explain that to us, right?
Sure, why not?
Cheers, buddy.
On Tuesday, when the voter registration deadline was finally coming to an end at midnight, the government servers were overloaded with traffic and crashed. People were understandably very upset. You know, they were very keen on voting, which is why they left it to absolute the last minute. And as a result, the government decided to extend the deadline on the advice of the Electoral Commission, and they've had to actually rewrite a bit, or they're going to have to rewrite a bit of legislation in order to make this all legit. But it's caused a lot of controversy because a lot of the people voting at the last minute, it's kind of assumed are more likely to be Remain voters.
Yes, well, because of the younger demographic.
Younger demographic, exactly. So this
and the panicking.
Yeah, there's a lot of good signs that point to that conclusion, but it does mean that if, in the event that it's quite a close result, it could turn out to be quite a controversial decision to extend the deadline. But Jazza, you're actually of the view that...
No, I'm not. But I was like, oh, I'm so angry that the system crashed. They should extend the deadline before they announced that they did.
You're a hipster for that.
Completely. I did it before. It's cool. Before the Electoral Commission backed me up. And Tory friend of the podcast, Nick, said that why are they leaving it till the last minute? This is completely their fault. It's just people who are lazy.
There's two sides, which for me is that on the one hand, you shouldn't leave it to the last minute. You should absolutely get that done. On the other hand,
bitch,
it's even though it's a ridiculously easy process, so much to the point that I'm like, I've done that wrong, that was too quick. Why has it been that quick for me to register? You do forget sometimes, and you put it off, and you're like, oh, I'll do that when I get home. And it should be more obvious and... I don't understand why it's not
something that actually makes it quite difficult for people to register really easily, even though it literally takes 5 minutes online nowadays, is because you need your national insurance number.
Yes, actually, I have friends who said this exactly.
A huge problem for young people is the fact that they don't get those cards anymore. So I think that we are of the age where we all received a card on our 18th birthday.
I never gave us mine.
You're weird.
Mine did.
Just that and all of your bank account details. But now they get a letter when they're 18, which is on the piece of paper. You're fucking losing that in 10 minutes, aren't you?
I mean, I've lost the card, so...
Great.
Well, somewhere in my mum's house.
There are other systems of voter registration that are arguably a lot easier. In France, for example, when you hit 18, you get given a voting card, and that is your voting card for the rest of your life.
Really?
And you just need to ask for it again, and it gets sent to your address, and it's also works as a proof of ID.
What is... A state in America recently voted to make it so that everyone was just registered.
I can't remember what... I do remember that story, I can't remember.
Can't we make it an opt-out system?
Why would somebody opt out of voting?
But at least they'd be in.
Because protest votes, for example, in Australia, they have compulsory voting.
But opting out of being registered to vote.
That's what I mean. Rather than it being mandatory to vote, why can't you just be, okay, you are born, welcome, you live in this country, you are registered to vote.
I believe that's the official letter that gets sent to all newborns.
It's printed, it's got a nice bear on the side with a specifically gendered colour.
It's quite interesting that we don't have, for example, a tick box way of registering. This was something that we used to advocate by the ballot a lot. So whenever you came into contact with government or local government, you would have a box that also said, do you want to register to vote? By also getting your driving licence. So whenever you have to get a driving licence, if you were submitting a tax return, if you were renewing your passport, you'd just have a little box that would say, yes, I want to register to vote at all of the account details. It's insane that we don't. There's fear of voter fraud, which is incredibly low.
Sure, but what...
Bringing it back to what happened on the 7th of June and the annoying thing that I had created a load of assets that I was sharing across social media that said the 7th of June and then all of a sudden they were irrelevant. Very annoying for me.
After the facts.
Yeah.
So they'd worked for a while.
They worked up until the actual deadline. Do you think that there is an argument to say that these lazy people who left it to the last minute shouldn't have been able to register to vote because they haven't taken their engagement with democracy into their own hands?
No, I think that's stupid, isn't it?
I think an argument could be made. I don't think it's a good one.
Why do you think it's stupid? These people have had a chance to do it for God knows how long, and they're choosing to do it at the very last minute.
I don't think being disorganised is, you know, should disqualify you from voting. Obviously, there's a base level of organisation you need just to get to the polling booth or arrange a postal vote. So, in effect, we do have that policy, but that's only for practical reasons, if you see what I mean. I'm not even sure why the cutoff needs to be so soon. Are there practical reasons why?
So for example, I have an American British friend who's registering to vote in the UK for the very first time, and they were like, sorry, you're not on our system. So they had to reach out to her. She had to send over another form of ID, and then she was on the register.
Right,
so it's in order to allow for those kinds of administrative processes.
But there tends to be like fuck ups at every election. So one time at one general election or local election, I think a polling station in Manchester pretty much just ran out of voting cards.
Yeah.
In the
local elections, there was a borough in London that were given the wrong lists, and so that stopped polling in the morning up until like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a better way for us perhaps to have people on the register? Do you think that we should just have automatic registration?
I do. I really think that it should be that. I think if we argue that voting is something that we are, like, it's a right, if voting is a right, then surely everyone should be afforded that right, and they should be.
I mean, everyone is afforded that right.
Yeah, but you have
this right, but you have to do this, 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 and this to get your right.
Hey. I mean, you still have to go to the, you know, you still have to go to the polling station.
Yeah, but then that's on you. We should make it so that everyone has the opportunity to do it, and if they choose to not do the opportunity, then that's their vote.
Like, the government.
You could say that's the registration process. Everyone has the opportunity.
Because if the start is here and the end is here. And the end is the actual ticking of the box and putting it in the thing. Registration is an obstacle. Like, you have to get through that one to get to the.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
it's not a massive, like.
No, it isn't.
Know,
and it is so easy to register.
There was a change to voter registration last year. Previously in the UK, you registered households. So the quote-unquote head of household would register everybody in the household for the electoral register. This meant that students at university were often mass enrolled by their halls of residence so that they were easily able to just like go along. That's no longer the case. You now have to individually register yourself each and every time.
What was the reasoning behind that?
That people take democracy into their own hands, blah blah blah, something like that.
It's a Tory responsibility argument.
Yeah, exactly.
I just feel like it should be the easiest thing in the world. And I'm not saying that the current registration process of going online and filling in details is not easy. I think it took me, like I say, 3 minutes. It's not a difficult thing to do. But it would be much easier if you ticked a box when you were doing your driver's license in 2016. Or if you just had it already and you had to actively not go to the polls. Like, I don't know, it should just be easy. Everyone should have a chance.
What's very interesting, especially with this particular referendum, is that in the voter registration changes that they did last year for the general election, that actually didn't come into force until after the election. But it meant that those affected and those most likely to drop off of the register because of the changes from household to individual registration meant that young people were more likely to end up falling off the register, in quotation marks.
Poorer people as well.
Poorer people, people without a fixed abode.
Just don't know.
So it was because they're more likely to be moving around regularly. For example, students change residences very regularly.
So you have to re-register
every time you move. Accommodation. Yeah.
Right. How long are you registered for?
For a lifetime, as long as you're at that address. So for example, if I am registered to vote here in Stratford, but I move to, I don't know, Chelsea, because that's where I'm headed, babe. I would continue to be registered at this address. Polling cards would continue to be registered at this address. However, who was whoever ended up taking my place here would be like, can you confirm that these people still live at this address? And then I'd be taken off if they said no.
Right. Right.
But what would be... I forgot my point. So for the... registration of the referendum, we have seen the Prime Minister panic a little bit because he needs the youth vote, and he's accidentally ended up kicking a few of them off of the register, and he's like, shit.
One thing he touched on the BuzzFeed debate was this thing of the choice he made not to include 16 and 17 year olds on the register. I know that's like more last topic, but it also seems applicable to this one. Mm-hmm. What's that all about? Like, why didn't he just say, oh, we're going to allow 16 and 17 year olds to register? Labour would have been in favour of it, would have been easy to push it through Parliament. He wouldn't even need to do it for all elections. He could just do it as a one-off in the referendum.
It's what ended up happening with the Scottish referendum.
Yeah,
the general election earlier in 2015 was the first time that young people any demographic have had the vote taken away from them. So they were given the vote in the Scottish referendum, had it taken away.
If you're handed it, you go, yeah, buddy, and you follow. I think there's a slight...
I don't know. I feel like there needs to be a very... I don't think it... When I was about the ballot, I had to say that, yes, votes at 16 would be a great idea. I don't think it's going to be hugely... I
wasn't bothered.
Someone needs to decide whether it's 16 or 18, and that needs to be universal across the board. I don't care which one it is.
I think you get a handful of 16-year-olds who would be... like really pissed off if you didn't, and then you get an awful lot of 16-year-olds who were just like, sorry, I'm too busy growing my fringe. Like
there is an argument,
and that's speaking as someone who actively did that. I only really got interested when I was 18.
You used to have a fringe.
Full Shane Dawson.
There's an argument that if you combined it with better political education in schools, and you could also get the registration process at schools.
I think that's so right. I think you need to. The fact that you don't get educated really about that, or you have general studies classes that no one goes to, like, it's just bollocks. Like, you should be taught more.
If you have a differing opinion to us, we all seem to be of the general opinion that people should have had the deadline extended so they could have. If you have an opinion...
You said initially that you were going to, like, give the counter argument.
Yeah, I didn't really believe in it very much. Sorry, Nick. Nick, if you want to troll us on Twitter, you can do so at Right Dishonour. But also, while you're doing that, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.
5 stars.
However many stars you want.
5.
I don't particularly care. 5 would be great.
5.
And especially for General Donator coming, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
For talking for like half an hour.
You could have several more episodes if you want. I've got a lot of stuff.
I'm sure we'll ask you back as our Hillary Clinton expert before the election.
I'll call in. Hi, yes.
I agree on everything. As always, thank you very much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast if you like it and want it in your inbox once a week.
Made it to the end of that sentence.
More or less. All right. Bye.
Bye.